America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostradamus. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostradamus, and Christopher Hart. The American Adversaries, Drive Time.
Listeners, try as I might, I just can't stop. The president blames a new group every day, and I just can't stop picking on him for it. That's why I'm Lair Adams, and this is the News Talk 660 WORL's American Adversaries Drive Time on a cloudy hump day. Now, in a recent interview, the president now blames Republicans for Obamacare's failures, even though they were against it and had nothing to do with it. They are at fault because they didn't jump on board and embrace the lies. That's right. If the GOP had been more gullible, things would be hunky-dory. Get ready, folks. Barack won't say it, but one of his disciples is eventually going to blame you and every other American for not going along peacefully. Something our host never does. He kicks and screams all the way. Christopher Hart!
That's right. And I hope you folks will join me in doing that. You are joining us right now for the American Adversaries Drive Time on News Talk 660 WORL. 407-774-8255 is the number. And I want you to go right now to that telephone, because last night I almost forgot to give away the bottle of Roxy Pacifics. We did it at the very end of the show.
Really? The very tail end.
And congratulations to Deidre, who won that bottle.
Who jumped on in about 9 seconds.
But we're going to do it right now. So if you want a bottle of Roxy Pacifics, a great new all-natural kelp water, antibacterial, anti-inflammatory, give us a call at 407-774-8255, and that bottle of Roxy Pacifics will be yours.
That's
and
right,
it
folks.
Really is great stuff.
Suntans, anything like that, to animal stain, you know, whatever.
All right, so let's get down to business. First of all, we have happy birthday wishes to go to Taylor. That's right, Taylor Jackson, Carl's daughter, has a birthday this week, and it's her sweet 16. 16 years old, so happy birthday to Taylor Jackson. And great wishes to the whole Jackson family. And don't forget, folks, you can catch Carl Jackson right here every Saturday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. live. All right. Yeah, you know, Barack Obama, yeah, he spoke to the Wall Street Journal board yesterday and indeed blamed the Republicans. But if you listened carefully to his so-called press conference last Thursday and his so-called apology, it was in a backhanded way. He was already blaming people for being, you know, too stupid to understand that he's actually doing us all a favor, and that we should be grateful for what he's doing, turning our lives upside down, because after all, it is for our own good. But there's a lot of people out there who are beginning to turn away from him. The latest CBS News poll shows his approval rating at 37%. And certainly I don't believe that it's bottomed out yet, but certainly we'll find out how low it can go. But it is causing the president to change his tune. He has already changed his tune, and part of his press conference was about changing his tune on Obamacare, where he more or less gave an extension to the individual mandate, more or less, and saying that insurance companies could continue the policies. But really, it was no real change of tune at all, other than on the face of it, because it has no real effect other than to confuse and complicate the matter anymore. And congratulations to Ann from Longwood. She was right on the button here, and she has won that free bottle of Roxy Pacifics. And don't forget, folks, we'll be doing that every show between now and Christmas. Now, as far as Jay changing tunes, the latest, and he did this also yesterday in that Wall Street Journal interview, and that is he has decided to change his tune on his approach to immigration. You know, prior to now, it has been an all or nothing. He wants a comprehensive deal. He wants that Senate package. Now he's changed his tune, and what he's saying is, well, we'll take it in bits and pieces. As long as we get the whole package in the end, I'll take it a little bit at a time. If I were the Republicans, I would put my finger on my nose and give him the old Bronx cheer. Too late, Charlie. We're not going to give you anything going forward because you don't deserve it as president, and we don't trust your word, furthermore. But there is going to be a lot of pressure, and we have already seen it within the Republican Party, to do some sort of immigration bill. And the reality is something that Carl has talked about on his show in regards to abortion. And I don't know if you folks have heard the news, but China has made a monumental decision in their birth policy. They have now decided to allow couples to have more than one child. You know, they had this one-child policy for the last 20 or 30 years now. And the same reason is why Carl is talks about abortion. One of the things that he says that is bad about abortion is it has a negative economic impact. And we see that playing out right here in the United States, where over the last, since Roe v. Wade, the last 40 years, we have aborted some 50 million Americans. And those people aren't in the job market. They aren't out there creating jobs. They aren't out there creating income. They aren't out there paying taxes. They aren't out there helping to support the Social Security payments. And the Congressional Budget Office has now come out with numbers that show that going forward over the next two generations, the number of people in retirement is going to outstrip what the government is already, their gloom and doom projections are. And it is because we are not quickly enough putting people back into the workforce, believe it or not, to replace those who are coming out. This in the face of dismal, you know, economic policy out of this administration. Regardless of that, if we had more people, there would be more economic activity, just by the nature of it. The Chinese has now understood this. They understand that they cannot continue, even though they have over a billion people, they cannot continue to maintain their social structure as long as they have a one-child policy, because it will mean that their population will eventually begin to decline, and once that happens, the economy goes with it. And that's what we're seeing right here in the United States. Hence, back to immigration. Since we have aborted 50 million people, we got to replace them somehow. And the business is one reason why the business community and the Republican establishment is pushing for the immigration. They're looking at it from a purely economic standpoint, unfortunately. For the Democrats, obviously, they're just fine to go along with this because they see political bounty in this. They see a gold mine of voters. Now, I don't think in either case that their worst-case scenarios will play out, or even their best-case scenarios, but the bottom line is we have gotten ourselves into a bad fix because we don't have a lot of Americans who would normally be Americans contributing to this society, and it is going to affect us going forward. And unfortunately, perhaps we should take a page from the Chinese and say, hey, look, you know, if you don't want to have the child, perhaps we can do something else rather than abort it. Because, after all, we need more people. It's basically as simple as that. And for all the global gloom and doomers out there with global warming, all I can say is this planet is perfectly capable of providing, sustaining life for a lot more human beings. And that's where we're going, whether we like it or not. Because that is the nature of the universe. All right, that is the nature of things right here on The American Adversaries. When we come back, we're going to have Jerome Corsi, and we're going to be talking about his brand new book, Who Really Killed Kennedy? 50 Years Later, Stunning New Revelations About the JFK Assassination.
This is Patricia Sumlin. When I'm in Central Florida, I like to snuggle with three sexy humps. Christopher Hart, Nostradamus, and Mayor Adams. Ooh, The American Adversaries on News Talk 660 WORL.
Never know.
These guys stimulate my brain. Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's right, folks, and we're fixing to stimulate your brain a whole lot more because we've got a great author on the line with us right now. You are listening to The American Adversaries, and it is drive time. I am Christopher Hart, and along with my co-host, Lair Adams, we're live in the studio. Our producer, Nostradamus, will join us shortly. But right now, folks, we have on the line a very accomplished author. This man has written dozens of books, or, well, not dozens, but he's written a lot of books. I believe about six of them have landed on the bestseller list, nonfiction books. And his latest book is called Who Really Killed Kennedy? 50 Years Later, Stunning New Revelations About the JFK Assassination. So let's go ahead and bring on to the show right now Jerome Corsi. Jerome, thanks for being back with us.
My pleasure to be back with you. Thank you very much.
It's our pleasure. Just to be exact, how many books have you had on the bestseller list?
I've had six New York Times bestsellers, two of which were number one.
That's right. And you do write fascinating books, and you're very thorough in the way you go about putting your work together. And I appreciate the fact that you've done the same thing this time around. You claim that they're stunning new revelations. What are some of these stunning new revelations?
Well, I like to begin by making sure people understand that when Jack Kennedy was shot, he was brought to Parkland Hospital, which is a very top hospital. It had it was one of the world-class hospitals in Dallas, and there must have been 20 physicians that looked at Kennedy in the emergency room, accomplished physicians that had seen gunshot wounds before, and doctors at Parkland all came out and agreed that Kennedy was shot from the front. His neck wound was seen as really a puncture wound about the diameter of a number two lead pencil. And the back of Jack Kennedy's head was blown away in a rather gruesome fashion. The doctors described they could actually see his brain coming out through the back of his head. And front wounds meant two shooters because when the shooting occurred in Dallas, the limousine was already past Texas School Book Depository. And that information is, you know, on the public record. It's in the National Archives. Dr. Perry even gave a press conference that was recorded. You can still see the video of the Parkland Hospital doctors saying, before there were any theories or anything else about the assassination, that Jack Kennedy was shot from the front.
And when the Warren Commission did their investigation, did they consider this, or do you think that they were just intent on blaming it on Lee Oswald?
Well, some of the documents that have been released, you have, for instance, Nicholas Katzenbach, who was Assistant Attorney General, wrote to Bill Moyers, who was the press secretary for now President Johnson, saying, we've got to have a commission that places the blame on Lee Harvey Oswald because we can't have this be an open issue. We could be at war with Russia because if you know, Lee Harvey Oswald was supposedly this communist, Russia's going to get blamed. So the whole idea of the Warren Commission was to blame Lee Harvey Oswald and to make sure that the CIA, the FBI, Lyndon Johnson, that the government was not investigated. So I maintain the research establishes the documents, now 5 million documents released by the government in the National Archives, was that there was a conspiracy that shot Jack Kennedy, and the conspiracy involved CIA working with the mob, the top levels of the government, and that's something the government never wanted investigated.
Well, I have two questions regarding that. First of all, was Lee Harvey Oswald a part of that conspiracy? And two, why would they want to do it?
Well, first of all, one of the documents that's very important is Lee Rankin, who was the counsel to the Warren Commission, wrote a document in January 1964, which he tells the Warren Commission that there is evidence that Lee Harvey Oswald was an FBI agent. Warren Commission even had his agent number with the FBI. Lee Harvey Oswald was getting monthly payments by the FBI for information, and these payments were tracked into Oswald cashing them into his account. Secondly, Oswald had a CIA number and a CIA file. James Angleton of the CIA was maintaining the file. Angleton was tracking U.S. military as loyal to the U.S. who defected to the Soviet Union as part of a program as double agents to penetrate the KGB. And Oswald was part of that program. Now, when Rankin wrote this memo, Alan Dulles of the CIA, who John Kennedy had fired after the Bay of Pigs, because the CIA had lied to Kennedy, Alan Dulles, in the meeting of the Warren Commission, January 27, 1964, says this information is too explosive, it's too damaging to the agencies, it's got to be held from the American people. So the Warren Commission lied and said that Oswald had no connection to the FBI or CIA, when the truth is the Warren Commission files, now released, show the Warren Commission had evidence that Lee Harvey Oswald was a government agent pretending to be a communist in his role in working with the CIA and the FBI.
Jerome, Larry Adams here. I'm telling my age, but I actually remember watching live on TV when Oswald was being transported and Jack Ruby shot him. And it just seemed so odd and so intriguing to me that a terminally ill man was able to get in there with a gun and there was no protection for probably the number one prisoner on earth that you would want to protect was carried out into a room full of people and a zillion people could have shot him.
Well, and in fact, Jack Ruby, who was a crime figure, he was Jack Rubenstein,
right,
from Chicago, part of the Capone mob. He had killed a union leader and was sent to Dallas, had ties with the Dallas police. He ran this strip club, the Carousel Club, and the police were constant, you know, members of that club. They came to the club. They got lunches and dinners. So Jack Ruby, when I saw, I was 17 years old when Jack Kennedy was killed, and kind of the moment for me when Jack Ruby killed Lee Harvey Oswald, I recognized that immediately as a mob hit silent Lee Harvey Oswald. It was kind of like when a second airplane flew into the World Trade Center. You know, the first airplane could have been an accident. The second airplane flew in, you knew it was terrorism. It was the same kind of realization when Jack Ruby shot Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah, a lot of people have that same feeling. But once again, why would the CIA want to kill President Kennedy? Because
Jack Kennedy would not fight these lying CIA wars. You know, the Alan Dulles had lied to Jack Kennedy as head of the CIA in the Bay of Pigs, trying to force Jack Kennedy to do a naval airstrike when these mercenaries, CIA-trained mercenaries, failed on the beach. Jack Kennedy would not go to war against Cuba for a lying CIA operation. Jack Kennedy was not going to fight in Laos. He didn't send troops. Or Vietnam. Jack Kennedy had been in Vietnam in 1951. He knew these were corrupt regimes, that we weren't going to win these wars. He knew the CIA was already running drugs out of Southeast Asia, out of Laos, starting in 1961, and Jack Kennedy wasn't going to go along with this kind of New World Order crowd that wanted to use the Eisenhower call of the military-industrial complex to fight lying wars, which, by the way, we're still doing. CIA won this by killing Kennedy and getting away with it. And the model for an assassination, a coup d'etat, killing the head of state with a patsy was developed by the CIA in Guatemala, where the CIA had an operation to kill the head of state with a palace guard, they said, shot the president of Guatemala. The palace guard, they said, then committed suicide and was dead. Nobody saw the palace guard shoot the president in Guatemala. CIA had a celebration of that. Allen Dulles, Eisenhower, and by the way, E. Howard Hunt, who organized the operation. And E. Howard Hunt, of course, then shows up organizing the mercenary army that was the Bay of Pigs and also in Watergate. That was the model the CIA had developed, and they applied it to kill Jack Kennedy because he would not go along with this agenda to fight wars that the CIA and military wanted to fight. Jack Kennedy thought we couldn't win and were not national security interests of the United States.
Okay. All right. Well, Jerome, please stay with us. We have to take a hard break, but we've got several more questions for you. And ladies and gentlemen, you can join us as well at 407-774-8255. When we come back, we'll continue this fascinating conversation about who really killed Kennedy 50 years later. Friday is the anniversary. Please don't go away. We'll be right back.
Here is tonight's American Adversary SoundbiteRx.com News Minute. SoundbiteRx.com, a great way to be better informed. Tonight's SoundbiteRx.com News Minute is being brought to you by Lake Mary Jewelers. For that special gift, for that special someone, go to Lake Mary Jewelers at the intersection of Lake Mary Boulevard and Lake Emma Road. Call them today, 407-878-6230. Now, here's Christopher Hart with Ted Bogert of SoundbiteRx.com.
Ted, you know, many second-term presidents have looked to make their mark in foreign policy due to normal political difficulties in domestic policy, which has become, as we all know, a disaster for President Obama. But as we see once again in negotiations going on in Afghanistan, this president will find no solace there.
You're right. He's not going to find any solace there at all, Chris. I mean, honestly, the way that the news agencies are reporting it, it's kind of like the apology tour. Is what they're labeling it, because the Afghan government said yesterday that it had reached a deal with the United States that we were actually going to issue a letter acknowledging our mistake, an apology letter made for all the things that we, quote-unquote, did during the 12-year war. Now, that has since been backed up. So basically what's happened is Obama was, as part of the negotiations, Obama and Kerry, they were going to apologize, I don't know what for, but apologize to the people of Afghanistan for the quote-unquote atrocities that we did over there or our policies as far as they're concerned. And what that in return was going to happen is that that was going to alleviate the relationships or at least make the relationship supposedly better with Karzai, who's the president of Afghanistan. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and of course, we're talking about negotiations over a security agreement for our forces to stay past the end of next year. And if we don't get a proper agreement, which allows our special operators to maneuver and move freely about the country, there'll be nothing more than targets over there.
They're going to be targets. And once again, first of all, we're going back to the apology. I don't understand what we're apologizing for. But then you add that to the fact that we are not giving them any kind of credence as far as them going into the homes. The homes, that was the whole issue, and that's what Karzai has been so upset about, or supposedly the people of Afghanistan have been so upset about. In reality, we are not protected. We're not giving our troops the ability to do what they need to do, and so they are. They're sitting targets. They're sitting ducks for all of the stuff that's going on in Afghanistan, and I think it's absolutely atrocious that we're going back and forth. Obama says one thing, does another. Kerry says one thing, does another. Nobody can get the straight story.
Yep.
Not in SoundbiteRx.com, though.
That's right. I was going to say, you can get the straight story, folks, at SoundbiteRx.com and take that cure for ignorance at SoundbiteRx.com. Thanks, folks. We'll be right back.
We're here, folks, and I wrestle professionally all over the world. I'm a former champion, and I know champions when I see them. Here are the best in politics. The American Adversaries on Orlando's AM 660 WORL.
Happy Wednesday to you, folks. Larry Adams here with Christopher Hart. We are the American Adversaries, and we got the best guests anywhere. And, of course, right now we have Jerome Corsi, who has written a book. Since it is the 50-year anniversary of the Kennedy assassination, he has written a book, Who Really Killed Kennedy, 50 Years Later. Jerome, I've got to ask you a question here. Now, I've heard the story. In fact, our executive producer, Nestor Dennis, mentioned Sunday night about Jackie Kennedy, when she was supposed to go back to Washington, they wanted to get her another dress or whatever, and she basically said, no, I want to show them what they've done. I mean, is this pretty much lore, or is this truth, or what?
It's truth. I mean, Jackie Kennedy, of course, came to stand beside Lyndon Johnson when he took the oath of office. She had the dignity to want to show the continuity of government. She wanted to show the American people what they did to her husband. She refused to change that dress all the way back to Washington. She's photographed with it, even with the body arriving at Andrews Air Force Base. And Jackie Kennedy made a very strong statement to the American people of what had been done, the tragedy of the assassination, killing her husband.
Well, who is they? I think that's my question.
Well, I think the they is what I'm pointing out. You know, the Warren Commission was constituted to really make sure there was no investigation of the CIA or the FBI. The Warren Commission internal documents show that the witnesses who heard gunshots in a grassy knoll were not interviewed. There was a constant attempt only to take testimony that agreed with the predetermined conclusion that this was a assassination that was done and committed in order to kill Kennedy, but to do it in a way that could not, you know, they were trying to hide the complicity of various CIA and FBI forces that had been involved in the assassination.
Yeah. By the way, I believe in that famous photograph where you see Lyndon Johnson taking the oath of office on Air Force One, Jackie is wearing a coat that Lady Bird Johnson, I think, gave her to put over that dress to more or less make her a bit more presentable. And, Nick LeCicero, our producer, just put up on the screen here, and I was going to ask you this. Do you think that Lyndon Johnson was involved in the conspiracy, or was this just a meant to send to him and everybody else who'd come along and take that chair in the Oval Office a message?
Well, I think Lyndon Johnson was involved. I mean, the Kennedys replace Lyndon Johnson with a ticket. The article was scheduled to appear in Life magazine, the second of the series, exposing Lyndon Johnson and the Bobby Baker scandal. And this would have destroyed Lyndon Johnson's political career. Lyndon Johnson basically realized that, you know, there had been two attempts to kill Kennedy. CIA had two plots that month. Again, with a patsy with a high-powered rifle set up in a building along the motorcade route, one in Chicago. Early in the month, the Kennedys knew about the attempt, and they canceled the trip to Chicago. Second was in Tampa. And again, the Kennedys had massive security, and the shooters stood down. But it was Dallas was their best chance. And by the way, if it had been raining in Dallas, if it continued raining, the bubble top would have been on the limousine, and Kennedy may not have been killed that day.
Yep.
But as it was, the plot went forward, and in the same plot, the same MO, it's all in the public record, it's in the National Archives, the documents that validate this. So it's possible to see the CIA plot. Remember, the CIA was involved in black operations with the mob, as been demonstrated by many commissions, the Church Commission, the House Select Committee on Assassinations. The documents are there, and Alan Dulles has been involved in assassinations around the world. The model was applied in Dallas, and Kennedy was killed in order to move forward with Lyndon Johnson to fight the Vietnam War.
Okay, by the way, folks, we are talking with Jerome Corsi, the author of the brand new book, Who Really Killed Kennedy 50 Years Later. And guess what? He and his publicist have been most generous to provide us with a couple of books to give away. So we will give them away to the first two callers at 407-774-8255. The first two callers will get a copy of Who Really Killed Kennedy 50 Years Later. That's 407-774-825. Give a call right now. And if you would like to ask Mr. Corsi a question, also you can call us at that number. Jerome, let me ask you this. Do you think that the second shooter, not Lee Oswald, but the second shooter, was he also with the FBI, the CIA, or was he mob? And do you know who he was and whatever happened to him?
Well, I identify several people who were there. In fact, people don't realize there was a French assassin, and Kennedy, by the way, had opposed the French in Algeria. He gave many speeches when he was a senator for Algerian freedom. There's a French well-known assassin that was involved with the CIA and the drug trade coming out of Southeast Asia. His name was Soutre, S-O-U-T-R-E. He was picked up in Dallas on November 22nd. About 2 days later, our government released him without an investigation. It is in the documents in the National Archives.
He was picked up after the assassination on the 22nd?
Yes. He was picked up in Dallas, arrested. He was known to be an assassin, an international assassin. The French government intervened, and the French government talked to the CIA. 2 days later, Soutre was released. On his own recognizance, he went free. The Immigration Naturalization Service released him, but it's now in the documents and it's on the public record.
Do you believe that he is the second one, or do you just say that he's another shady character?
I think he was involved in the assassination. I think there were probably three teams. I also identify Roscoe White, who said he was an assassin. Roscoe White had a job with the CIA. He had a job with the Dallas police. And his photograph actually appears in the Hughes film. After the assassination, he's seen in the railroad yard wearing his Dallas police uniform without a cap, without a weapon. And you can actually, there's actually photographs that exist of Roscoe White at the scene. Beverly Oliver, who is a dancer in the Carousel Club, recognized him. His wife was also a dancer, Roscoe White's wife, or Jack Ruby's Carousel Club. And she said he was a shooter, and he was there at the time, and is recognized in the photograph.
By the way, folks, congratulations to Rich from Orlando and Carl from Winter Springs. They have won the two copies of Who Really Killed Kennedy 50 Years Later. And I suggest you folks, if you're really interested in this, and most Americans are, that you go out and pick up this book, because this is stunning new stuff, a lot of stuff I had never heard of before. So please go down to your local bookstore, go to Amazon, and we'll even put it on our website so you can order it from Amazon through us. Who Really Killed Kennedy 50 Years Later by Jerome Corsi. Jerome, you say a lot of new documents have been released. Are they available to the general public? And when was this document dumped? Or did this happen over time, or was it all just at one time?
Over time, many of the documents were released after Oliver Stone's film JFK. There was a new law passed. There was an assassinations review board. There's now 5 million documents in the National Archives. I reviewed many of them. And they really do establish very clearly that the CIA was involved in these rogue black operations plots on assassinations. Three of the major mob figures, the mob and the CIA, were working together. Jack Kennedy even had Bobby doing mob CIA assassination plots against Castro. And three of the mob leaders, Carlos Marcello in New Orleans, Santos Trafficante in Tampa, and Sam Giancana in Chicago, all later confessed to their involvement in the Kennedy assassination. Again, that's on the public record, and I cited in the book.
Okay. We've got a couple of callers who have questions for you concerning involvement. And since you mentioned Cuba, let's go to Rick first. Rick, your question, please, for Jerome Corsi, and thank you for calling.
Can you hear me fine?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay, good. Well, I just want to, I'm curious about the potential of Cuban involvement, because one of my doctors, who happens to be Cuban originally, and I mentioned to him, I said, hey, what do you think about the Castro being allowed to be there? I mean, I always contended that it was convenient for us to have that visible threat 90 miles away for the industrial military complex. And he says, I think we could have gotten rid of him at any time. And he said, he told me, he really blew my mind, because he said, well, I got one better for you. I believe that Castro worked the CIA and worked, not only worked in the past, but was a CIA operative, basically.
Yeah. Thank you, Rick. I appreciate your call. You know, there has a bit of a ring to truth to that, because certainly Manuel Noriega worked for the American government. Jerome, can you respond to that?
Well, I think Castro had ties back into the CIA, and Castro, I don't think he was an active force. I think he was smart enough not to get directly involved in the assassination, but certainly some of the Cubans who were part of the, you know, the attempt to get the country back and had been angry at Jack Kennedy over the Bay of Pigs, I believe participated. There's a very interesting incident been researched with a woman called Shara Marie, who was dumped out of a car in Louisiana with two Cubans who were headed to Dallas to participate in the assassination. And she was in a hospital. She predicted that the assassination was going to occur, and she described it to the doctors. It's on the record that these guys were going to go and kill Kennedy. Doctors didn't believe her, but then after the assassination, they took her testimony, and as part of the Warren Commission, the House investigation, the House Special Assassination Committee documented that her testimony was true, and they did believe that E. Howard Hunt was providing money to various Cuban patriots who were there to get revenge against Jack Kennedy and were part of the assassination team.
Right. By the way, he's referring to the House Investigation Committee. That, when did they come out with their report? Wasn't it in the 80s or something like that?
It was about 1978.
78.
The House Committee.
Yeah. This is separate from Warren.
Then chance it was a plot, a conspiracy to kill Kennedy.
Right. And this is separate from the Warren Commission.
Yeah.
All right.
Occurred, you know, the Warren Commission was 1964. This was 1978. And it was an official government investigation that concluded Kennedy was killed by a conspiracy.
Okay.
Let me ask you, Jerome, if there was any one particular piece, missing piece of this puzzle, would you say it's the who done it or the why?
Well, I think the why is pretty well established. Jack Kennedy had powerful enemies within the military and the CIA that wanted to go to war in Vietnam. Kennedy was blocking it. Also, the mob, with, you know, Bobby Kennedy prosecuting the Eastern mob. The Eastern mob had reason to want to kill Kennedy as well. So the motive is established, and I think now as we get more information, we're beginning to identify likely suspects and really say, and I do in the book name several of the people, I think, including Roscoe White and this guy Sutra, who I think were part of what I believe were three different assassination teams involved in Dallas with the shooting.
Okay. You mentioned Vietnam. Lo and behold, we have a caller who has a question about the Vietnam connection, if there would be to one. This would be Dennis. Thank you for calling, Dennis. And your question, please, for Jerome Corsi.
Yeah, I would ask Mr. Corsi, do you see any connection between the assassination of VM three weeks earlier and Lodge was the ambassador involved in that takeout and the Kennedy assassination?
Good question. Yeah. Thank you, Dennis.
I discussed that in the book. It's a very good question. Jack Kennedy had given instructions for Diem not to be assassinated. And Diem was assassinated earlier in the month, November 1963. Kennedy was in a meeting with General Maxwell Taylor in his office in the White House. And they came in with a cable from Henry Cabot Lodge, who was our ambassador in Vietnam, that Diem had been killed. General Min was the guy now the CIA was putting in. Kennedy had given specific instructions, and Kennedy had been warned that if Diem was killed, the CIA was going to kill him next. Kennedy turned ashen in the meeting. He left the meeting. Kennedy realized that he no longer had control over the CIA. The CIA violated his instructions and killed Diem. They were probably next coming after him.
Jerome, let me turn the question to forensics. Do you cover the forensic evidence that was accumulated and the forensics tests that were made since the assassination in your book?
Yeah, in great detail. I mean, the forensics are very questionable. People don't realize, for instance, the magic bullet that was found, the single bullet theory, was found by an orderly named Tomlinson on a gurney, Parkland Hospital, that neither Kennedy or Connolly had been on. It could never have been introduced into court. With the chain of evidence on that bullet was very questionable. I even found in the archives a envelope sent in by the FBI that was supposed to be a bullet from the assassination. The bullet was missing. The file was there, but the bullet was missing. The rifle, the first rifle found in the sixth floor was a Mauser. the Dallas police who recognized it and actually had Mauser stamped on it. It wasn't until there was a wallet, there were three wallets for Oswald dropped in the assassination. One was dropped at the Tippit killing, the policeman who was killed, and that wallet had all this identification for Oswald, and one of the identification papers was this A. Heidel, and a mail order rifle was bought and delivered to a postal box office that Lee Harvey Oswald had set up. But it's very questionable because there's no evidence that Lee Harvey Oswald received that rifle. And Lee Harvey Oswald said he didn't order that rifle. When the Mannlicher Carcano appeared, the Mauser disappeared. And in fact, there's no real direct link to prove that Oswald actually picked that Mannlicher Carcano up.
Why would Lee Oswald have killed Officer Tibbet, who he shot, I guess... Tibbet stopped him as he was walking down the street, and he shot him?
Well, there's no proof that it was Oswald. The only witness, a woman named Markham, could not identify Oswald as the lineup. And Oswald probably did not have time to get to the Tibbet killing. Tibbet killing was called in as soon as he was killed on the police radio from his car by civilians who were there. We know the exact time Tibbet was killed, and Oswald did not have the time to get there and do the killing. The actual killer in the Tippit murder was never identified positively.
Okay. Jerome, we're going to have to take a short break. We just have a few minutes left in the hour. Will you spend them with us?
Yes, I'll stay with you.
Okay. All right, folks. We are talking with Jerome Corsi. 407-774-8255 is the number. I have one line open. We have Eva on the line. We'll get to her question next. I have another one or two for Jerome as his lair, but we'll be right back. We're the American Adversaries. You are listening to us in Drive Time on News Talk 660 WORL.
Well, I'm gonna find a home. It's political, professional wrestling at its finest. The American Adversaries on 660 WORL.
Okay, welcome back to the show. We're just about out of time. We're talking with Jerome Corsi, the author of the brand new book, Who Really Killed Kennedy 50 Years Later. I have Eva on the line. She's been holding, so I'm going to go in to Eva first. And Eva, thank you for calling and your question for Jerome Corsi.
Yes, Jerome. I heard Johnson had a part in it because I heard he gave Conley the orders to sway the motorcade on Elm Street and something else. And there was three people in that book arcade. And the one guy, this guy that wrote this book, said the one guy that was, you see in the shadows went to college with Johnson. And Johnson was going to have to go to prison if he didn't win the election. And that's why he got rid of Kennedy, because he either faced prison or the president was much better.
Okay, thank you, Eva. Jerome.
I think there's increasing evidence that Johnson at least knew that the assassination was going to occur. I mean, there's, you know, even discussion, if you take a look at the Elgin photograph, the AP photograph, it looks like Johnson's ducking down in the car, as if he knew the shots were going to occur. Johnson was the one who benefited the most from the assassination. Instead of being dumped from the Kennedy ticket for the Bobby Baker scandal, which the Kennedys were releasing in Life magazine, became the president and the presumptive nominee in 1964 for the Democratic Party for president. So there's pretty good evidence that Johnson had the motive, but I think was aware of these prior plots in November in Chicago and Tampa to kill Kennedy. And Johnson was actually pleased. You know, one of the photographs, after Johnson takes the oath of office in the airplane, he turns over to Congressman Albert Thompson, who's there, and the congressman winks at Johnson as if this is a great victory. I don't think Johnson was upset at the assassination. I think he was composed and had anticipated it happening. So I include Johnson in a list of suspects that was involved in the assassination.
It's been reported pretty widely that Earl Warren did not want to be the head of the Warren Commission. Do you think that the reason for that was because he knew it would be a whitewasher? That was what he was expected to do?
Well, I think so. I mean, Nicholas Katzenbach, Assistant Attorney General, writes a memo to Johnson's press secretary, Moyers, right after the assassination, says we've got to have this commission that finds Lee Harvey Oswald the guilty party because we want to end the speculation. And I think that at least three members of the Warren Commission didn't want to sign the final report, including Russell Long, because they felt it was a put-up job. The commission had not proven the evidence, had selectively looked at the evidence. And I think the Warren Commission has been very thoroughly discredited. You can find ample evidence in the release of the documentation now on the Warren Commission that it was a very selective investigation, only took witnesses that agreed with their predetermined theory that Oswald was guilty.
Yeah. In terms of the forensics, you know, a lot of research has been done in regards to the trajectory of the bullets. Are you saying that there's more forensic evidence out there that show that the bullets didn't just come from the back, that they also or came from the front?
Yeah, well, I think the Parkland Hospital evidence is, you know, the doctors who initially looked at Jack Kennedy said the wounds were front entry wounds.
Okay.
These were doctors reporting before there was any theory out there.
All right.
And you see these computer demonstrations where laser shows, you know, a line could have been drawn through Kennedy to hit Johnson. Well, the back wound that Kennedy suffered at Bethesda, the autopsy, yeah, Dr. Hume put his finger in, it only went in about two knuckles. There's nothing in the medical autopsy of Bethesda that indicates any bullet went through Jack Kennedy's body. There's no medical evidence of single bullet theory.
All right. I'm going to cut you off there because I only have 40 seconds left, and I just want you to give a brief answer to this. What can we as Americans learn from this, if anything?
Well, I think we have to learn that the CIA is continuing the cover-up. There's still 50,000 pages the CIA won't let anybody see. And if Lee Harvey Oswald is the guilty party, why is the CIA withholding documentation?
Okay.
The CIA is running a disinformation campaign, as they have since Operation Mockingbird in the 50s, where they paid journalists. CIA is out there pumping the theory that Harvey Oswald is guilty, and the documentary evidence released since the assassination proves very contrary evidence.
Okay, Jerome Corsi, we're going to have to leave it there tonight. But I'm going to read your book, and then I want to have you back so we can discuss this some more, if you will, with us. Thanks.